All right, everybody's wondering, are the 49ers going to return to dominance? They won their first time winning consecutive games was this past weekend against Tampa Bay. Hard to believe that it took until November to do it this season, especially since they rank as such a good team both offensively and defensively. There are flaws for sure in both of those phases of the game, but there are flaws everywhere in those phases of the game around the NFL. The 49ers actually rank relatively really, really well on offense and defense, but the special teams has held them back to the extent that it took them until November to win consecutive games. Now they have a chance to win three in a row, and that's going to come here against the Seattle Seahawks tomorrow. So the question is, will the 49ers dominate the Seattle Seahawks again? And will they be dominant again as a team, just as a whole? You guys know what my theory is. It comes down to that third phase of the game. We'll delve into that in a little bit. But last time San Francisco played Seattle, they won by two possessions. It was 36-24. It would have been a much bigger rout had the Seahawks not returned a kickoff for a touchdown. That was the Laviska Shenault play. When you look at some of the numbers in that game, they were very, very lopsided. The 49ers were at 7.9 yards per play. Whenever you're anywhere close to 8 yards per play, that is a complete annihilation of the opposing defense. The Seattle Seahawks couldn't even manage 5 yards per play. So it was 7.9 yards per play to 4.9 yards per play. Rushing game. 49ers in that one against Seattle rushed for 228 yards on 6.9 per carry. That shouldn't happen at the college level, but it happened at the NFL level. Seattle, 20 carries, 52 yards, 2.6 per carry. Listen, I think the Seahawks are clearly the worst team in the NFC West. They lost on their own home field to the Rams a couple weeks ago. That was before their bye. The Arizona Cardinals are obviously currently in first place in the division, and the 49ers have already completely walloped Seattle, 36-24, and with the statistics that I just read. So the four, and this goes back beyond just this season. Last year, we saw the 49ers win twice against the Seattle Seahawks and not have much trouble doing it. The year before, they beat them three times, including in the playoffs. The closest game over the past few seasons has been that playoff game where Seattle was able to be in it up until the third quarter. And then it was the big strip sack. Remember Charles Omenihu getting Geno Smith coming around the edge and then Nick Bosa recovering it. Well, that was the 2022 playoffs. That was the wild card round. That was actually the beginning of D'Amador Lenoir's run all the way to a contract. That's worth putting up here. I have this one in the description. You can go check it out. How D'Amador Lenoir's contract paved the way for a Brock Purdy mega deal. I will also say that the Brock Purdy mega deal path that the 49ers are currently on, a huge step toward that, was taken against the Seattle Seahawks in 2022 when Purdy dominated Seattle with a broken rib. That's something that people don't remember, right? Purdy's first was entered into actual legitimate game action against the Miami Dolphins in week 13 of 2022. And he executed so well against all those zero blitzes that the Dolphins threw his way. They just figured, oh, new quarterback, he's not going to be able to handle all out blitzes. Purdy handled that just fine. Very next week, he played Tampa Bay, obviously handled an entirely tailored game plan for him just fine. The Buccaneers threw everything they had, including a nickel blitz that rattled Purdy on snap one, but then he bounced back to play a great game. But he broke his rib in that game against Tampa Bay, and that was on one of the scrambles. He was running out toward the sideline, and he dove for a first down. That's where he broke his rib. So that set up the very next week against Seattle. It was a short week. It was a Thursday night, and the 49ers were gunning to clinch the division. They were gunning to clinch the NFC West, and Brock Purdy led them to that in a game that I don't think was as close as the score would indicate, because they had a pick six from D'Amador Lenoir actually called back in that game against Seattle because Nick Bosa landed on Geno Smith too hard, which I think is one of the weaker rules in the NFL, but it is a rule. And Nick Bosa landed wrong on Geno Smith, so negated a pick six. If that doesn't get negated against Seattle on that Thursday night game that Brock Purdy played with the broken rib, San Francisco probably wins that game by 20-plus points. I think instead they won by 8. Jordan Mason sealed it with a run. But Purdy, who was barely able to lift his arms up over his head over the course of that week, wasn't able to throw a single pass in practice, went into Seattle and led the 49ers to a division clinching win over the Seahawks. You know, that's been a house of horrors for San Francisco for so long. When he did that, Brock Purdy was firmly on the path to becoming the 49ers quarterback for a really, really long time. And he kept on doing special stuff through 2022, 2023, even more special efficiency wise. And it was coming off of the torn elbow ligament. Now it's all but certain. I mean, you got to knock on wood because nobody likes injuries. I'm knocking on wood right now. But if Brock Purdy continues delivering at the level that he's delivering at, he is going to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. All these people talking about, oh, he's going to take a team-friendly discount, all this, all that. Why are you so worried about some other man's money? I mean, lay off of it. That's like weird. It's downright weird how many people are talking about Brock Purdy and he should take less money, as if you would tell that, you know, to your friend who's at a job and he's applying for a promotion. It's like, oh no, just take less money. Take less than you're worth. Just quit worrying about other people's money and just analyze what's going to happen here. Brock Purdy's been playing as one of the top quarterbacks in football, and that means that he's going to usurp the high water mark if things continue along this trajectory. That means that a mega deal is on its way for Brock Purdy, and that means the 49ers have to get ready for it. I mentioned D'Amador Lenore a little bit earlier. Well, D'Amador Lenore is the one that just signed his contract. And the way that this was structured for the 49ers is going to allow them to have wiggle room to pay Brock Purdy and others as this 2025 season approaches. You can see the salary cap hits on the right. They kept Lenore's cap hit down at $4.9 million in 2024 and $5.9 million in 2025. Those are relatively low cap hits. It jumps up to $20 million in the subsequent years, about $20 million for four straight years until 2029. But the great part about that is that none of those years are guaranteed. So there's flexibility for the 49ers to restructure the deal, to part ways with Lenore if that becomes something that needs to be done, or to keep him at what could be a bargain rate by then. So the 49ers have earned team contractual control through 2029 with this deal, but they do not compromise themselves in an unsustainable pigeonholed way in 2026 through 2029. It was important for them to push cap hits to the future, which they did through the double bonus structure. You remember you stretch the cap hit like an accordion over the course of the contract. It was very important for the 49ers to do that. They managed that. They kept Lenore's cap hits low in the near term. And now the team has, and I went through this, we can actually go to the Google Doc. They have $49.7 million in salary cap space in this 2024 season, which they can roll over what they don't use into 2025. And that is a spot where they need more cap space. They're only at $5.4 million that year, with 20 more players to sign and Brock Purdy still to sign. But you can see if you add that $50 million onto this, then all of a sudden it's $60 million, $55 million, then you could continue to play the same game that you did with D'Amador Lenore's contract, that you did with Brandon Ayuk's contract, and that is depressing the early cap hits by pushing money into the forward with a double or even triple bonus structure. Hell, I wouldn't be surprised if Brock Purdy's contract contained a quadruple bonus structure to push the money far, far into the future so the 49ers can continue surfing the wave of the rising salary cap. But you know what? The quarterback play, the cornerback play, you know, all these big money deals on offense and on defense can be wasted if the 49ers don't do a better job on special teams. So during our morning walk today, recorded a little bit on the 49ers special teams unit, just how bad it's been. And here's the opportunity waiting for them against Seattle tomorrow.
We've got to start with the special teams discussion. We're at Billy Goat Hill. Reminds me of Billy Goat curse, the Cubs curse, because the 49ers might have a special teams curse. You go back to 2011, Kyle Williams, 2012, the Ravens kickoff return in the Super Bowl. And then obviously, I don't think people want to talk about the 2023 season Super Bowl, but that came down to special teams as well. Look how atrocious special teams coverage has been for the 49ers this year. You've got punt coverage and kick coverage. They are outliers in the way that you don't want to be an outlier. I mean, we talk about the Brock Purdy charts, especially from last season, but ever since he joined the league, he was in the upper right corner. This one is the polar opposite. This is the bottom left corner. So the reason I bring up special teams now is obviously because on the aggregate, the 49ers have top five offense and defense. We look at DVOA, but special teams is basically dead last. They're also playing a Seahawks team that has tormented them in special teams for years and years and years. And the reason that's super interesting is that the 49ers special teams coordinator, Brian Schneider, actually used to be the Seahawks special teams coordinator. And he coordinated some really, really good units for Seattle that lashed out some punishment in special teams on the 49ers. Think Richard Sherman, all those guys. Sherman had that block kick return for a touchdown. I think that was in 2013 against the 49ers. That was with Brian Schneider as Seattle's coordinator. Now he's San Francisco's special teams coordinator, and things aren't going nearly as well. So I do think that when you look at special teams issues, it is a more of a team cultural thing. The 49ers focus so much on offense and defense, and with Kyle Shanahan, there just isn't as much focus on special teams as a team like the Detroit Lions, who are really good. Dan Campbell's their head coach. As a team like the Baltimore Ravens, John Harbaugh is their head coach. The Chargers, Jim Harbaugh is their head coach. The 2011 49ers, although that was the Kyle Williams year, they had a really good special teams unit that year, Jim Harbaugh, Brad Seeley. So much of this for the 49ers is about just not screwing it up on special teams. Just don't screw it up. Be mediocre. Can they attain mediocrity consistently? I don't think I'm asking too much. Because if they can, that's when your top five offense and your top 10 defense is going to show out. That's all that you have to do if you're the 49ers. And you have to do it against the Seattle Seahawks team, whose only chance in this game is to neutralize the playing field via special teams. They almost did it back in October when Laviska Shenault had that long kick return for a touchdown. Remember, the 49ers were dominating everything in that game up until that point. It was another cautionary tale that special teams can ruin everything. So maybe Brian Schneider can hold the special teams advantage against his former team, the former team that used to terrorize the 49ers on special teams. Or maybe special teams is going to be the 49ers' Billy Goat curse. They sure hope that it won't end that way, because it was ugly last year when special teams derailed everything in the Super Bowl.
What have you, paralleled only by this? This is only offense and defense, though. It doesn't include special teams. See, the 49ers, they're over, way over here on the right. The offense, I think, still has quite a bit left in the tank, too. They can improve in the red zone, which I fully expect them to. They're number 27 in red zone touchdown percentage right now. But Christian McCaffrey is now back. I think that gradually starts to trend back up to at least the middle of the pack. You improve in the red zone, that in and of itself will push the efficiency up into this top tier. As you can see, the diagonal tiers have the 49ers defense good enough. It's better than Washington's. It's better than Baltimore's. It's good enough to where they only need a little bit more from their offense to be in this top tier. Now, the defense, I think, has also been improving for the 49ers. I think that bigger leads, which can be facilitated by better red zone production and also better special teams play, actually can lead to better defensive play. Because the one weakness of this defense, I think, is the run defense. And if you can get ahead by more than a possession, you don't have to worry about the run defense, because other teams are just going to be throwing. So everything is connected. And the one big issue for the 49ers right now is this chart, this graph right here showing the special teams. And this is not even including the field goal struggles that they had last week against Tampa Bay. This is just punt and punt coverage and kickoffs and kick coverage. It has been miserable for the 49ers. I mean, there are bad teams on special teams like Minnesota, Philadelphia, the Rams, and then there are absolutely atrociously horrific teams on special teams, and there's only one of them. That's the 49ers. So this right here is promising for San Francisco. You could see so many ways that they can realistically improve into tier one, but it doesn't include this. And if this can just move toward the pack, if they can move to where the Vikings are, I don't think that's asking too much. Then the 49ers will be in a much better spot. In fact, if you had already done that, if they were already, you know, closer to the pack, they'd be 7-2 right now instead of 5-4. But I digress. Back to our original question. Will the 49ers dominate the Seahawks again? I have a few reasons why this game could go really well for the 49ers. A, Seattle lost their starting center over the bye week. He decided to retire, Connor Williams. So they're going to be going to a second-year man at center. Center has been a huge deal in this rivalry. In 2020, the 49ers had center issues galore. They were down to their fourth stringer, Hronus Grossu, when they went up to Seattle in week 8, and they just got bludgeoned by the Seahawks. It was A-gap blitz after A-gap blitz. The Seahawks, they had DJ Reed at the time, the former 49er. They even sent him up the A-gap. They just decided to blitz on the center, and it was a new center. It was an inexperienced center, and it worked. It collapsed the entire offense. I wouldn't even be surprised if the 49ers had Nick Bosa operate from defensive tackle here for a couple snaps in this game. I know they've done it a couple times. It's a once in a blue moon type of thing, but why not try to put a little bit more pressure on the interior? Now, that being said, Malik Collins has been amazing for the 49ers this season. He still ranks number 5 in pass rush win rate of defensive tackles. This is somebody that's never ranked that high. He's been a good, solid pass rusher. He just hasn't been a top 5 guy. He's also played the run well. They traded a 7th-round pick to Houston for him. They've actually traded for 3 Houston defensive linemen in recent years. Amenahu, I already mentioned, came up big against Seattle. Malik Collins, really good player. And we'll see what Khalil Davis does as he has more time practicing with the 49ers in their system. But I think all defensive tackles need to be ready to capitalize on the fact that Connor Williams, Seattle starting center, has retired. And I think that even the tackle positions for the Seahawks with starting players in place do not match up very well with what the 49ers are bringing to the table. The last time that San Francisco played Seattle in October, Nick Bosa had 14 pressures, which is a record for the past few seasons. He tied his own record with 14 pressures. So they're getting already having no trouble pressuring Geno Smith from the exterior, but they can also pressure Geno Smith, I think, even to an even greater degree from the interior this time, given those center issues for Seattle. 2, the Seahawks cannot run the ball. Like, this is a team that's really struggled in terms of rushing efficiency. And against the 49ers, they only managed those 2.6 yards per carry in October. That leads to Geno Smith having to drop back and throw way more often than the Seahawks want to throw. He had to throw 52 times in the game on Thursday night in week 6. So that's 52 throws, 312 yards. That's not an efficient amount. Like, the yards per attempt there is, I have to do the addition in my head because they don't have it. Well, they should have it for me up on this NFL stat sheet, but they don't. So let's do 52 or 312 divided by 52. It's going to come out to something in the fives, isn't it? Exactly six yards per attempt. That's not good. Not good at all. So if you can hold an opposing quarterback to 6 yards an attempt while they're only rushing for 2.6 yards per attempt, it's not going to be an efficient offense. It ended up being 4.9 yards per play for Seattle. They just didn't match up well against the 49ers. I don't know how else to put it. On top of all that, Geno Smith threw 2 interceptions. He threw the one to Malik Mustafa, and then he threw the one to Renardo Green. They do have some solid weapons that can do some damage on the outside. DK Metcalf is going to be back in this game, but they had DK Metcalf last time fully healthy, and the 49ers didn't have Charvarius Ward, kind of like they won't have Charvarius Ward this time, and it was Renardo Green that was able to shut down DK. There was this play early on the Malik Mustafa interception when DK lined up in the left slot. Deommodore Lenore locked him down in the left slot, so then the throw, I think, was Jackson Smith Najigba to the right side, and that was the Malik Mustafa interception. Geno just forced it away from Deommodore Lenore. So no Charvarius Ward, no problem for the 49ers. And their secondary dominated Seattle. I see this as a potential statement game for the 49ers. I say, will the 49ers dominate Seattle again? Because they've dominated them in the past, but a dominant win this time for San Francisco would mean 3 straight wins on the season, heading into Green Bay and Buffalo. And it's already November 16th right now, right? So you're officially in late November if the 49ers get through tomorrow with a win, and you're in late November on a roll. you're in late November on a potentially dominant note. And that's heading into this gauntlet at Green Bay and at Buffalo. And when we talk about November, it's synonymous with the 49ers hitting their stride. So I think absolutely the goal in this game for the 49ers should be to come out, make a statement defending the home field. And I think a lot of people will start talking about this 49ers team as if it's 2021, 2022, or 2023 again. You'd be at 6-4. You'd be on a three-game roll. You'd be in November. And then you'd have a chance to go on the road and give that badass aura that the 49ers have given in the past at this time of the year. You'd be able to walk out with a boombox in Green Bay, walk out with a boombox in Buffalo. All you'd have to do is win one of those two games to convince everybody that you're a contender. If the 49ers leave the December 1st game at Buffalo at 7-5, they are in excellent position, period. Maybe they'll be even better than that. Maybe they could be 8-4 leaving Buffalo. But I think the key to everything is winning the game against Seattle tomorrow and winning it convincingly, even though you might be down a couple pieces. So one of the biggest thorns in the 49ers' side when it comes to potentially dominating the Seahawks is Trent Williams, maybe not playing. Trent Williams is dealing with an ankle injury. And he didn't practice at all week. So we sit here and we wonder, okay, what's going to happen if the 49ers do not have Big Trent at that left side? Because Seattle is now healthy defensively. They were partially healthy when they faced the 49ers in October on that Thursday night. I think that this would be a wonderful test of the 49ers' offensive line depth. You need 7-8 quality bodies any year to make a legitimate Super Bowl run. You need to be able to weather the storm when you don't have your best offensive lineman. Maybe not for the whole season. Maybe that's too much to ask. It'd be probably too much to ask for Detroit to go the whole year losing somebody like Penei Sewell. So it'd be too much for the 49ers to go without Trent Williams for the whole year. But for a game, you've got to be able to do it. Jalen Moore has to be able to fill in. John Feliciano, I don't know if he's going to fill in for Aaron Banks, who's questionable. He'd have to be able to take that left guard position and do a good job there. Then there's the center spot. Jake Brendel, Dominic Pooney, Colton McKivitz, center to right tackle. They've been playing good football this year. They'd have to elevate their game if Trent Williams isn't able to go tomorrow. So this could be a fantastic test of the 49ers' depth tomorrow. The depth that they will need, I guarantee you, they will need as soon as tomorrow potentially, but they will need to make it all the way to the Super Bowl and win it. Last year, they needed to dig into John Feliciano, right? After Spencer Burford started the season suboptimally. They went to John Feliciano, right guard. They upgraded that position. That helped them get as far as they did. Daniel Brunskill used to be the man that the 49ers had to rely on that wasn't part of the original five. 2019, he was huge. In 2019, the 49ers played a Sunday night game against the Green Bay Packers where they were missing both of their starting tackles. They didn't have Joe Staley. They didn't have Mike McGlinchey. So it was Justin School and it was Daniel Brunskill. Those were the 49ers' two tackles. They ended up getting the job done and absolutely destroying the Packers. So missing your top tackle is not something that you should point at as a reason to say, okay, this team is not going to be productive at all offensively today. They better win with a defensive touchdown. You can still be productive without that top tackle if you are a team that has a line that is deep enough. So I think that if Trent Williams doesn't play, San Francisco does have a chance to showcase how deep that offensive line truly is. Again, let's go back to the team tier chart. I think this says so much of it. It illustrates it in a good way. The 49ers have a solid offense that's nearing elite level, that can push, strain forward to elite level if they can showcase that O-line depth, if they can get better in the red zone with Christian McCaffrey, and they have a defense that can feed off of that and move higher up here on the team tier chart to get things done. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Want to take a moment to thank the person we've been thanking all week, Mike. Mike has been doing an awesome job producing for us here over the past several seasons now. Isn't this our third season, 2021, 2022? This is our fourth season doing this channel. Unbelievable. 2023 and 2024. Mike's been with us for a while, so Since this month is all about gratitude, I wanted to shout out to Mike. And there's another person that we often don't get to thank enough, ourselves. It's sometimes hard to remind ourselves that we are trying our best to make sense of everything. And in this crazy world, that isn't easy. Here's a reminder to send some thanks to the people in your life, including yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Let the gratitude flow with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/LombardiLounge today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LombardiLounge. Anyway, the question was, will the 49ers dominate the Seahawks again? I think the answer is yes. I actually picked a resounding win for the 49ers. For my prediction, though, we're going to do a separate video. We're doing some fun stuff this afternoon in the city, so stay tuned for that. For now, you can hold yourself over by reading about D'Amador Lenore's contract and how it paved the way for a Brock Purdy mega deal. That one is in the description of the YouTube channel, so go ahead and find that. Subscribe there. And everybody, have a great Saturday. We'll talk to you very soon.